Maybe if we don't come back from break, then I don't have to talk about the Bills. Just keep playing music, Vic.
Kalish, learn from Brunt. Talk therapy.
That's right.
Brunt just said it felt cathartic. You are the opposite. Whenever the Bills lose,
we can hold things inside.
We have to just beg you to tell us, because you make a frowny face and then you go, yeah, they lost. I want to move on.
Well, let's talk to someone that'll help us work through our feelings. This Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, host of the Ross Tucker podcast, RossTucker.com, Ross Tucker this, Ross Tucker that. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hey, what's up, dudes? How are you?
What's up? Oh, you know, not much. Just another devastating day in Bills land.
Oh, man. That was rough.
Was it ever?
That was really rough. Because it was like, you know, if they just got blown out, right? Like, it looked like it was going to be.
Yeah, then you're like, okay, we just sucked.
Yeah, you'd be disappointed. But you'd say, all right, you know, Monday night took too much out of us. It was too emotional of a loss against the Patriots, and no big deal. I mean, it stinks that we didn't come to play, but I really wasn't expecting us to. But to come all the way back, what was it, 24-0 or 24-3?
Yeah, it's like 24-3.
Yeah, to come all the way back from that, I was just so impressed. And it's funny because, like, if this were like college football, I feel like, you know, the Bills would actually maybe not fall that far in the rankings. You know, people would be like, oh, they weren't, but it's the NFL and it's just a loss. You know, it doesn't really matter stylistically how it looks. You don't get any credit for the effort. Doesn't matter. None of it matters. They lost. And the way in which it happened, because refresh my memory, but the Bills even got the ball first in OT, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like they had their chance again. And then, you know, Brady throws it to Perriman, who's wide open. I will say, I'm sure people are talking about it, I thought that I did not love the consistency or lack thereof of the officiating.
Yes.
Especially late in that game. It felt like, okay, they're letting them play. They're not calling these pass interference.
Wait, what does Diggs have to do to get a call?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like they're not calling these pass interference penalties against Diggs. Mm-hmm. So, okay, they're letting them play. But then they do call the Evans one, which I do think probably, you know, in real time looked like more of a penalty.
Yeah.
But I guess I'd rather err on the side of, if you're not calling the Diggs ones, don't call the Mike Evans one either.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, trying to debrief or, like, understand what's happened to the Bills, them forcing OT, yeah, like, there's a positive there that they can play half a game so strong that they can come back from such a devastating first half of the game, but also sits worse as a fan because you're like, why didn't you just do that the whole time? And then in terms of, you know, who can we place blame on for these last couple games, Josh Allen did everything he could yesterday, really put the team on his back at the second half of the game. He was like in a walking boot after the game. So I don't think you can really point too many fingers at him. To me, it's some of the coaching decisions. And I guess my question for you is, where are you seeing the biggest blame if I'm a fan trying to work through my feelings today?
Well, there's a bunch. One of which would be, I don't really understand, when you see the success that they had yesterday with the design quarterback runs for Josh Allen, I don't understand at all why they didn't call one of them on Monday night against the Patriots. I mean, I even tweeted at Ross Tucker NFL, where were all these designed quarterback runs for Josh Allen on Monday night? I mean, I guess I kind of feel like they would have won the game. I mean, they would have beat the Patriots if they called, even just in my mind, just a handful of design quarterback runs on Monday night, but they didn't. So then when you're down by 21 points against the Bucs, I thought, like, I didn't think Ailish, they were going to be able to come back in the game. Mm-hmm. So when they're calling these quarterback runs down 20, I'm like, how stupid is this? You didn't do it Monday night when it could have won you a game. But now that you've got, like, no shot to win the game, you're running this guy and getting him beat up and Josh Allen's getting smashed, I was not a fan. It was almost like watching the first half and was all design quarterback runs. It was almost like the offensive coordinator, who I know very well because he was in New England when I was there, Brian Daboll. It was almost like, oh, okay, Ross, you're complaining that we didn't have any quarterback runs Monday night? Fine, that's all I'm going to do. No running back, just quarterback. You know, it's like, it was like a little kid.
So that's my spin zone, though, for the Bills fans today, is as a neutral observer, as someone who doesn't have, you know, skin in the game on this one. And, you know, other than the fact that I actually did bet the Bucks. So I thought that was a walk-away win for me, and then
didn't
all of a sudden it was like
game,
a sweat.
Other than literal skin
yeah,
in the
yeah,
game.
Yeah, other than that. But no, but like no emotional skin in the game. Let's just put it that way. So I thought, all right, the MVP race is heating up now. It's basically just two guys, and it's Brady and it's Rodgers, and Brady gets lead. And both guys have four touchdown passes, right? Like actually how many, I don't know how many Brady had, but I know that Rodgers had four. Brady had an incredible game. He leads that touchdown drive in overtime. It felt like, oh, he had sealed it up, and then Rodgers came out and said, no, I'm going to stay alive. However, even with those two guys playing that way, where it was so spectacular, and Brady breaks the completion record on, you know, a fall-away, fade-away to Mike Evans, and I'm thinking, man, this guy at home is going to be really tough to, like, he's not going to be a walkthrough again this year. We might end up with him in a Super Bowl. Josh Allen was the most impressive quarterback. Like, there's just some of the throws that he makes, they're incredible. Like, his arm is insane in a league of insanely talented arms where we talk about all these guys like, man, look at what Zach Wilson was supposed to do this year, right? Like, we look at him in the combine. Will, like, the arm that Allen has a different zip to it. And then the power when he runs downhill and all of a sudden he's in the secondary and I'm like, he's going to run this corner over. Like, that, he's going to stay on his feet. He's going to truck stick somebody. Those quarterback runs he does, like, they're incredible. And I looked at it and said, man, I really thought that team was dead. And then the way he's played in that game reminded me, no, that team can win a Super Bowl because they have that guy. He could be, on his best day, the best quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason, I think, why Josh was, in a lot of people's mind, probably the MVP favorite coming into the year. I know I thought the Bills would have, you know, a great season. He would have a great season. I mean, really, I think he would have won it last year if Aaron Rodgers hadn't had such a preposterous year. So everything you're saying, I agree with. Although I would say this to you. Like, did you see a couple throws that Justin Herbert made yesterday?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Herbert is incredible as well. It just seems like the Chargers don't play as many marquee games that we're all watching, which it's kind of like the Heisman Trophy, right? It's like, okay, Bryce Young had a really, is he really better than Kenny Pickett? No, but most people really didn't even see Kenny Pickett play this year. You know, the Pitt quarterback. When, you know, for any of these awards, the team you play for, how good they are, when you watch them, it matters. It's like the defensive player of the year. I think you can make a really strong argument for TJ Watt, but he's missed some time. I think you can make a really strong argument for Myles Garrett. But, you know, the Browns aren't a team that has been great this year or on TV a lot. Whereas Micah Parsons, it feels like every Cowboys game we're all watching and he's just making ridiculous plays every game, which I think that counts. I think that matters because, you know, the voters for these things are just like 50 writers. Like the AP says, okay, you 50 dudes, you get to vote on this. And these writers usually cover other teams. So they're not really watching every game. Like the writers don't go in and like, let me break down the tape. You know what I mean? Like now they might talk to some experts and people that do watch the tape to get their opinion. But ultimately for any of these awards, to your point, when you play and who you play matters because it's like what Brady, Allen, and Rodgers did just came across so much louder than what Herbert did, even though Herbert had some ridiculous plays as well.
Another guy who has historically been in the MVP conversation and isn't this year and probably rightfully so, but fits that kind of thing you were talking about of, hey, when are the eyes on you, is Patrick Mahomes. And the Chiefs have now railed off 6 wins in a row, a lot of those on the back of their defense. And obviously they scored 48 points against the Raiders this week, but it wasn't a high-octane Chiefs kind of, like 240 yards in the air. It's nothing... nothing crazy, but this is a team that, at least on the defensive side of the ball, seems to have figured some things out. Has your confidence come back around on the Chiefs after that shaky start, or do you still need to see a little bit more consistently from Mahomes to kind of put them on the level of a Patriots in the AFC?
No, I think the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC.
Same.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC because here's the deal. They're quote-unquote, I'm doing the air quote thing right now in my detached garage in Pennsylvania, the quote-unquote weakness of the Chiefs right now is their offense with Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill. I mean, is that what we're talking about? But it is. I mean, their defense is a top-five defense right now. So their weakness has the, well, I don't know, four guys, five guys I just mentioned. I'm going to go ahead and say the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. Mm-hmm. I will take those dudes as my weakness any day of the week. So I really do think it's the Chiefs. And, you know, now, how about this stat? I don't know if you guys saw this. In the last seven games, they've only scored more than 22 points twice, and it was the two games against the Raiders. Mm-hmm. So it's like somehow they figured out, you know, how to move the ball and score points and all that stuff against the Raiders, but not anybody else. But I have faith that by the end of the regular season, by the time they get to the playoffs, I just think Andy Reid, Mahomes, I think this crew will figure it out, and I think they're the best team. I mean, if they have a top five defense, how are they not the best team, in the AFC at least?
No, I totally agree with you. And that's not to disrespect the Patriots and what they've done this year, but come on. We're really going to say that Mac Jones is the favorite over Patrick Mahomes in a playoff game? Like, his coach didn't trust him to throw four passes in a huge game against the Bills. He's not beating Patrick Mahomes on a neutral field. Their defenses seem to be fairly equal, even if you could probably give the nod to the Chiefs right now. I just thought, you know, man, that game, you don't learn much from it because the Chiefs have just owned Las Vegas in such a just dominant fashion. And now that, to me, felt more like, oh, okay, now this is a complete teardown. They already had the Gruden thing happen. You figured that there was a lot of uncertainty in Vegas already, but now it's just, you know, it's done. Everybody looking for new places of employment. That team is going to go have to shift into a completely different avenue. So, do you trust Dak and the Cowboys to beat good teams?
Yeah, I think that they could beat a good team. Oh, yeah. I don't think that they can.
So you changed it. You moved the goalpost. I said good teams, plural, and you were like, one time, but multiple?
Oh, no. Then I guess the answer is no. I thought you meant can they beat good teams. I think they can beat a good team. I don't think that they can beat three good teams in a row to get to the Super Bowl. I'm just not seeing the consistency I'd like to see. And you know what's interesting is ever since the injury, Dak's just not as good. He's not playing as well. I mean, that interception he grooved to Cole Holcomb yesterday was horrible. I mean, it was like he was giving Washington a chance to get back in the game. He missed several other throws high. It just doesn't seem like he's playing. The way he was playing before he got injured, the first half of the year, I thought he was arguably the MVP of the NFL, and I thought the Cowboys were the best team in the NFC. But now, I mean, they're at best the fourth best team in the NFC, and I'm not picking them to go on the road and beat Brady and the Bucks or Rodgers and the Packers. You know, the way the seeding is right now, I actually give them a better chance if they're like the four seed to win at Arizona against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals than I would going to Lambeau or going to Tampa to take on Tom Brady. So the Cowboys might actually benefit from their first game, although I guess their first game right now would be against a good team like the Rams. So they might not even get to that next round. And by the way, if somebody driving right now, I'm a little confused as I'm talking right now. So the people in Toronto driving are like, what is it? Like, where is this guy talking right now?
Oh, are you thinking we're picking up the noises of you driving?
No. I'm not driving, but I thought what I just said was confusing because I was talking to the fact I think the Cowboys could beat the Cardinals because the Cowboys will likely be the four seed. And in the divisional round, they would likely play the Cardinals. But then I just thought to myself, wait a minute, if they're the four seed, that means actually Yeah, yeah. No,
no, no don't. Oh, now you're confusing yourself.
There's that Princeton math coming in.
We were all following
in.
Yeah.
No. Okay, listen. I was right the first time.
Yeah.
I was right the first time. The 2 seed plays the 7 seed. The 3 seed plays the 6 seed. The 4 seed plays the 5 seed. The Cowboys have to play Rams. I was right the first time.
Yes.
Never doubt yourself.
Yeah.
I was right the first time, the Ross Tucker
today.
Story.
Yeah. Never doubt yourself. Usually your first instinct is the right one.
All right, one last thing I'm doubting here. We'll take it back to the AFC. I don't believe in any team in the AFC North. The Ravens couldn't complete that comeback against the Browns yesterday. Every team in that division is between 6-6 and 8-5, and they just keep doing kind of the rock, paper, scissors thing. Do you have any faith in anyone that might come out of that division?
By the way, I always go rock, and I try to argue that the rock would go right through the paper.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It would.
Like, so you're telling me
and
a rock?
You're a big guy, and so people go,
scissors?
"Okay, man, you win."
Also, like, what is covering the rock do? That doesn't do anything.
Yes,
you don't beat the rock.
So the same rock that can smash scissors can't go through a piece of paper?
Nope.
I mean, what world are we living in right now?
The world of strong paper.
Unbelievable. Anyway, I think the question about the AFC North. Yeah, they're all average. They're all above average, slightly above average. You know, it's like the NFL's dream. They'll probably all finish with 8 or 9 wins, and like one of them will make the playoffs, the other 3 won't. But no, I don't think any of them are particularly good. I guess I have the most faith in the Bengals, maybe.
Yeah.
Like I like the way the Bengals played yesterday. They had to come from behind, and they showed a lot. Maybe it's just because the Bengals are new, you know. I don't know. I just like watching the Bengals. I thought that was impressive. Whereas the Ravens, look like they're going the wrong way. The Steelers are stuck in neutral. The Browns are kind of stuck in neutral. The Bengals are the team that's like they're the new kid on the block, and they're at least ascending as opposed to where they were last year. And I like their uniforms. It reminds me of Princeton, the greatest Ivy League school of all time. So I kind of like the Bengals.
I know I'm with you on the Bengals thing. I just think they're tough. Ultimately, you have to look at these last 2 weeks and say, hey, they did lose them, right? But they also have a little bit of a different level of expectation. But I just think that they're tougher and that Burrow is playing better than any of the other quarterbacks in that division, that the defense is solid. So I do like the Bengals out of the group, too. I don't think any of them can win a Super Bowl. But, yeah, the Ravens are just starting to accumulate the amount of injuries where you just look at it and go, well, what are they supposed to do? You know, like we might get calls to play in the secondary next week. They lose Lamar Jackson. Just the O-line is so banged up. And if you're a Browns fan, well, like Ross, your boy, Baker Mayfield, like he has a decent start to that game. And then just an absolute nothing burger from him again against a team that's that beat up, that's playing their backup quarterback who gives them 2 fumbles that take away well, at least 10 points go the other way. Like at least 10, probably 14. And it comes down to 2 points. You go, I'm sorry, Browns fans. If you're happy about that win in a season where you were supposed to be contending for a Super Bowl, like people forget the way we were talking about the Browns before the season started. And I'm just watching that game going, I'm sorry. I don't want to see them in a playoff game like that. They don't deserve to be there.
Well, they're not running the ball nearly as well as they were last year. And that's a big thing. And for them to not score any points in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Against that Ravens team, that's a huge red flag. I mean, it will be interesting. It's confusing me with the 17 games, but like, it feels like right now there's a lot of teams that are going to finish with 8 or 9 wins. Like, this season might end up being the NFL's dream season, in which like 28 of the 32 teams finish with 8 or 9 wins. There'll be like 2 that are good. To like the Lions and Jags that are bad. I mean, obviously I'm exaggerating, but there's a whole lot of teams in the middle this year. I mean, look at how many teams right now have 6 or 7 wins.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ross, I don't know if I feel much better after our conversation. You got a lot of shots on us today. Me especially. I'm feeling it today.
Hey, at least he snuck in a dig at the Jags
before
we let him go.
It's even. Well, yeah. I would like to say it was a pleasure for you to join us this morning. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. See you guys. Feel better, Ailish.
Thanks. Ross Tucker. What a guy. You can find him at anything with the words rostucker.com, at Ross Tucker, Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
I was right the first time, the Ross Tucker story.
Ross Tucker, yeah. He was brought to us by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
Did I make you feel a little better about the Bills? Because again, it's the same thing as the Bengals, where you go, "Hey, you were scrappy, you were tough, you came back, you fought hard, but you lost."
No, like I feel as I said it to Ross, like the second half of that game, you see the team that you want to see all the time. You know that they have the potential. It's almost like either get blown out and don't show us any of that, or show us it the whole time. I don't know if you feel really better about that. You know, there's promise. Like, I mean, they play the Patriots in 2 weeks, and that's the kind of opportunity to show that in a full game sample, but we haven't really seen that in a while.
I'll tell you what else is really concerning if you're a Bills fan.
Oh,
is Josh Allen in a walking boot after the game
last night
and saying he's not quite sure of the nature of his foot injury.
Yeah. But he said, it's okay, I finished the game. I'm like, yeah there's adrenaline.
Sure.
And you put the team on your back.
I know the walking boot sometimes is just take the weight off of it while the swelling goes down and you check it out. And you have a not very spicy Carolina opponent this week at home. So if you were going to survive anything, it's there. But then you're going into Foxborough, so.
I actually came out of it feeling great about the Bills. I'm not going to lie. And I hated seeing their, I think that they've lost now every one score game that they've been in, right?
Every single one.
They are just in tight losers. However, to me, that is one of those regression stats where you go, are they really that flawed, or has it been some bad luck in there as well? And I think it's two things.
Can be
that
both.
That they've played some tough games and that they haven't been their best selves, like against the Patriots. But you also look at that game and go, hey, it was a wild weather game where it's really tough. Mm-hmm. And then you had one opportunity. You had to give the football to Tom Brady, and then he torched you with your secondary without Tre'Davious White. But ultimately, that defense, they didn't give them anything in that second half. They completely shut down Tampa Bay. And the offense, again, to me, is like, go through the AFC right now. We do all this talk about, the Kansas City defense, and they're rounding into form, and they're dangerous. Josh Allen whooped that defense's ass. Like, took them to town. Josh Allen did that.
315 yards passing.
In that next Patriots game, if that weather is not so insane, and it has to be like Mac Jones versus Josh Allen, I know how I feel good about that. Josh Allen's playing better than any quarterback in the AFC right now. Like, who's playing better than him?
He's like the one shining feeling right now as a Bills fan.
That's what I mean.
But that's good enough, because he can be the guy that puts the team on his back, like last night in the second half. Like, you didn't need anyone really else than him to be his dominant self.
I will say, though, even acknowledging the weather in that game, the Patriots haven't allowed 250 yards passing in 7 games.
Yeah.
That's a good test for him.
It is a good test.
Even in a fair weather thing. And so the one more thing on the Bills in terms of the close games thing. Mm-hmm. I'm less of a investor in the whole, like, your total point differential matters more than your record in terms of predicting ahead. I think in football, there's a lot of experience and coaching and execution that goes into your record in tight games. Having said that, the Bills, big picture-wise, have played like a 10-3 team analytically, and they're 7-6. So if you did subscribe to that, or even if you use it as a hair splitter when it comes to playoff matchups and stuff,
they should have at least one more win.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that gives you a little bit of confidence too. And stats like DVOA from Football Outsiders have continued to be pretty robust on the Bills. And those things have pretty significant quality of competition adjustments.
I know.
Which is, like, the quality of competition adjustment is why that same metric isn't super high on the Chiefs defense yet.
Yeah.
Because they've done it more against bad teams. So, I don't know. It's just something to consider, where if the Bills got hot, played really well against the Patriots, got those two layup wins to close the season at home against Atlanta and the Jets, I don't know.
If you're going to reference the DVOA thing, though, you have to remember that no team had a bigger swing in DVOA than the Bills against the bad teams than when they finally faced Tennessee.
Right. I'm just saying that the DVOA tries to control for that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there are a lot of indicators for the Bills that they're better than a 7-6 team, but your mileage is going to vary when you see them lose a bunch of close games.
Yeah. I know how I felt in the first half, which was I was ready to bury that team.
Oh, yeah.
And I went, oh my God, they're dead. Their season's over. This is cataclysmic for them in terms of the expectation.
It's like the SAT word of the day.
Yeah, that's right. I really did think, okay, this franchise is dead. They're buried. I don't know where the hell they go from here. This is a nightmare. People thought they were going to win the Super Bowl, and now we're in this spot where, are they even going to make the playoffs? Because I thought, you know, there's a chance, even as bad as Carolina has played, and they're doing this, oh, we're going between, I can't even remember the guy's name, PJ, I always think PJ Tucker, but it's like, no, Walker, PJ Walker, yeah, that's it, PJ Walker and Cam Newton, like, it's really bad there. Maybe you shouldn't fire your offensive coordinator when those are his options. But the idea that they could look ahead to the Patriots game, sleep on that a little, and then lose a tight one, and all of a sudden you're like actually playing for your playoff 100%. Lives against a Patriots team that wants to put you away and has already broken you. There's a little bit of that.
They've lost to worse teams than Carolina. So yeah. I don't take anything as an easy win anymore.
That second half, the way that they did not fold, that they came out and their defense was stout, and the way that Josh Allen led them, even though they lost, I did come out of it thinking, okay, you have to weirdly be a little happy with it.
Sure, but I don't want him to have to drag the team to victory every night either, because like he's not going to have that sustainability.
But don't you think that's kind of what they're designed to do now?
Yeah, 100%. There's the flaw. Uh-huh.
I like that you guys, like Eilish, I just want to recenter you for a second, that you're stressing out about a Bills team and how they're going to look in the playoffs if they can get there and stuff like that.
If they can get there.
My Super Bowl is this coming week where the Jags play the Texans and the loser very likely gets the number two pick.
Oh, there you go.
The Lions play three really good teams in their last four games. So the Lions seem unlikely to add a second win there. But yeah, Jags it's a must lose for a team that's very good at it by Jacksonville Jaguars. So just so you're
Texans
aware.
Texans are going to win that game, no question.
Texans
are going to win.
Oh, Texans are going to win. Yeah, sorry, I thought you said the Jags are going to win.
Aren't the Jags favored?
I haven't looked at the lines
yet. I think that the opening line was Jaguars' favorite.
It's in Jacksonville, so two 2-11 teams or whatever the records are, might make sense.
Oh, you got to go all the way down to Jacksonville and try to get a win there?
Yeah.
In the home of that swimming pool?
Yeah, you got to go to the stadium that's better known for hosting wrestling events than football.
Oh, it's in Jacksonville, everyone. You heard Blake say it.
It's going to be a little humid.
Yeah. Oh, those Texans players don't know what they're walking into
Jags
down there.
Jags are 3-point favorites.
Yeah.
So.
Who's betting the Texans money line?
Speaking of betting. Successful UFC week. Maybe not so much for some of us on the NFL. We're going to talk about all that stuff and then tee up Raptors Kings next on the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan.
Is this a wrestling thing?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Okay.
The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
I thought so.
Are we doing a different money song every day
until
in this
block? Until Vic runs out.
There's probably so many songs about money. Like, you'd probably be set.
No, you know what you could do, though? Like, even if he runs out, just the Young Money discography, like, every song has Young Money drops in it. You just play Bedrock or something like that.
There's no running out of songs about money.
I want Money, Money, Money by ABBA.
Okay. Sure.
They came out with new music now.
Yeah, but today it's a wrestling one because I made Vic, or we... made Vic some money on the weekend, so he's giving me a little shout.
Don't include me in the wee.
Wait. Before we do this, I just need to say a wrestling thing to you from Friday's show.
Yeah.
So, because, all right, you weren't here for this, but I can't remember. I think it was Saturday afternoon. I'll admit, I was nursing a little bit of a hangover, and I went and had a little nappy poo. And during my nappy poo, I went and watched Dark Side of the Ring, the Bret Hart.
Ooh, oh, nice.
Because we had the
Lewis
talk.
Hamilton screwed Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah. And I just, again, I watched it and I cannot overemphasize that anyone that is sympathetic for Bret Hart has got to be the dumbest human being alive. Like, they went to this guy over and over again and were like, hey, you're leaving our thing. You're leaving our promotion. You got to give the belt to the other guy. And he's so sour about the other dude that he won't give it to them, that he forces their hand in a scripted thing. And people are like, can you believe that they screwed him over? His boss is deciding in the scripted thing. And he's like, and years later, I am the sympathetic figure and I've never changed my story. I can't stand this story. It is the worst story in the history of sports.
So,
it's insanity that we entertain this guy's delusions that he in some way was in any way screwed over. And then he punched his boss in the face. He punched his boss right in the face and knocked him out of the room.
Loogie right in the face,
too. Him and punched him in the face. Yeah, and we're like, poor Bret Hart. So, what a sympathetic good guy. Worst guy.
Hang on. So there are a couple
Team Vince.
There are a couple things that come from this. The first is that
I'm right.
The sentiment has generally turned closer to my Brett screwed Brett is like a thing.
Yeah. what now, an idiot.
And like if Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels weren't also really dislikable figures at the time,
sure,
it would probably have gone all the way there. There are also like some fun conspiracy theories that like it was all a work and Bret Hart was a sleeper agent sent to WCW, but then he got like real life really badly injured and they couldn't like he couldn't do anything. He couldn't wrestle anymore. So, yeah. Anyway,
all I have to say is that like I've never felt more like I don't understand a story than this.
Yeah. So we talked last week about like the sports stories that we just don't care about.
Yeah.
That's a big one
for you.
Yeah, I don't wow. care.
I'm like, shocked that's your favorite guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's like the best of all time. Like
the best there ever will be?
Best there is. Yeah. Best there was. Best there ever will be.
Yeah.
I believe I guest hosted on your show one time in a Bret Hart t-shirt.
Yeah. The Roots of Fight one?
Yeah.
That's such a nice shirt. And yeah. I it's so nice that me, like non, even knowing Bret Hart was a bad guy, almost bought the sweats or the joggers of it. Anyways, let's move on.
Sorry, I just had one more thing on Ted DiBiase.
Oh, because, okay.
This is, no one's going to care.
Yeah, okay.
But while we're on
that's
money.
That's a bad setup for you about to talk.
Don't sure. turn the dial.
Yeah, so like... I was obviously a big wrestling fan as a kid. Wow. And you have those, I don't know if they have them now, but they had like Wrestle Buddies, which were like stuffed wrestlers that
those.
You could basically do moves on.
Yeah.
And the one that I had was Ted DiBiase. So
okay.
I think most parents would have got their kid like one of the wrestlers they like.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad was like, no, I'm going to get him one of a wrestler he hates since he's going to be beating it up all the time. So that's my main memory of Ted DiBiase when you play that music.
So you beating that senseless, like, look at me go, Dad. And he's like, yeah.
And that turned me into the wrestler I am today. Flying elbows off the couch.
Okay. Oh, boy.
So our gambling weekends. Blake and I agreed on 4 consensus UFC picks that we gave. Every single one of them hit.
And I didn't listen in and I missed it.
Like an elbow drop from 5-year-old Blake off the couch onto a Ted DiBiase wrestle buddy.
And that included 2 underdogs in terms of the way, like method of victory underdogs. So that felt very good. I have now given you 5 straight weeks where in my circa $1 million picks contest against the spread, my best NFL bet of the week against the spread has hit. Saints covering against the Jets, which actually looked pretty shady for a lot of it. And I was like, oh man, why did I just bet on Taysom Hill? And then they did their thing and it was Sean Payton versus Robert Saleh, like I thought. Coward's Parlay hits. Ailish, you were gone. I don't know. Blake and I made a ton of cash. Vic made a ton of cash.
Now, feels I will like say, you... the mea culpa of, and I said this earlier, I did give a decent chunk of it back on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good Friday, Saturday.
What did you lose money on Sunday?
Just I didn't have a very good NFL day.
Yeah.
Oh, so Blake just forwarded me his UFC betting notes.
I thought you wanted to see it.
Oh, yeah, I want them 2 days later when I can't use them.
Hey, listen, as I always say to people, listen to the show.
I was
subscribe
busy.
To the podcast.
Busy baking.
This block is always gambling picks.
Oh, you were baking.
So
where are the fruits of that baking?
Yeah. Where do we get some stuff from you today? I see some banana bread here, so this must be from you.
So yeah, Blake's mother, Denise from Drumbo, shout out. We love you on the show. She just she sent over some banana bread and I was having it during the break. It's delicious. And apparently it's not that healthy, which is even better.
So this was my...
she's like Miss Keto.
Well, vegan. I don't think she's keto.
Whatever, she's fit.
Yeah, she's very healthy, generally. But she said it's the least healthy banana bread she's ever healthy. Made.
That's enough.
Yeah. She's healthy. What? Yeah. She's in terrific shape.
Anyway.
The banana bread's great. Thanks, Denise.
Yeah. Yeah, NFL.
Let's talk about money.
NFL, I gave some back. NBA, I came around on. I'd had 2 rough weeks after a really hot start on NBA. I'm back to 56% against the spread for the year, which is comfortably above break even, but not quite as hot as I was early on.
So let's dive into tonight then. Let's try to give some picks for tonight. Do you want to start with the Monday Night Football game or the Raptors?
Let's do Raptors. We haven't talked any basketball tonight and today so far. So Raptors are 4.5-point favorites at home against the Sacramento Kings.
Mm-hmm.
Sacramento Kings are, of course, a tire fire, as they always are. They fired their coach, and they're the rare team to not really get a dead coach bounce. They're hanging around. They did have a 3-game winning streak at one point, but 2 of those were like back-to-back against the Clippers, and 1 was the Magic, so I'm not really buying. They played the Hornets close, and then they got kind of stomped by the Cavs on the weekend. our Cavs against the spread monsters.
Our Cavs.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Cavs are good.
They're on my league pass ranking.
Yeah. The Cavaliers are good betting this season. They are. They're 21-7 against the spread,
which is insane. Yeah.
So your concern on the Raptors side is that once again, OG Anunoby, Ken Birch, Precious Achiuwa, all out. Goran Dragic still away from the team. David Johnson, the G Leaguer, the two-way, is in a walking boot. So you're playing with 11 guys again. The saving grace, if you're looking at the Kings side of things, is that Rashawn Holmes is out.
Mm-hmm.
He has an eye injury, and if you were looking, is he out though?
I thought he might return for this game.
He is listed on the injury report right now as out.
Okay,
as of 8:30 this morning.
Okay, because the last I had checked was that he was a question as to whether he was going to come back. So that's interesting because
he's out.
Well, I was going to play the Ailish side of this if he came back, which is the guy that all the Raptors fans wanted and people know was going to have a big rebounding and scoring game, especially against the Raptors, like considering what they have inside right now.
Yeah. And
so that's too bad.
And Holmes is like, he's legitimately very good. He's averaging 14-9 and he's shooting almost 71% from the floor. So if you're a Raptors team that is playing your infinite game in a row with no center, not having Holmes in there is a huge, huge thing. The Kings have been playing a little smaller, which plays into kind of how the Raptors want to approach things. They're starting Terrence Davis now, or had started him a couple times. They didn't start him last game, but Alex Len is their starting center. So you don't really, I don't know if you have that same fear level. If you're a Raptor fan, maybe you do because Alex Len revenge game.
Well, I was just going to say Ailish is definitely betting some Alex Len props.
Well, because he's not on the prop sheet so far.
Oh,
so
that's tough.
That's the issue here.
I hate when they do that where it's like the player I'm looking for, he's going to make me money, and they know it, so they don't put it on.
As of right this second.
There's some guy sitting across, like Ailish is ready to make her picks. She's got her money in her hands. She's like staring across the counter.
Not allowed.
He's just like, no, there's no Alex Len prop. I'm sorry, lady. I'm sorry.
As of right now, it's actually a fairly limited player. Props card, I think, because there was some uncertainty about who would and wouldn't be available. But you're only looking at Halliburton, Barnes, and Fox on the Kings side of props right now.
I think this is you throw the Raptors money line down in a parlay tonight. Mm-hmm. That they are a parlay piece. Like, that's what makes the most sense to me.
-185.
Yeah, that's a really nice little piece because Toronto, okay, they've beaten bad teams. And I just think, like, basically, you know what my play is here? I'd be looking at Siakam props again because he already dominated this team. And not only did he dominate this team, he was horrific against the Knicks. And basically the story of Siakam's season and actually the story of his career the last couple of years is, hey, this guy, what was he, 3 of 100 in that game against the Knicks? He missed every shot.
3 of 18, I think.
Oh, my God. Putrid.
Apologies to Siakam if that's wrong, but I'm pretty sure
I think it was 3 of 18.
His over-under for points is 22.5.
Yeah.
And then, so the one I always like with Siakam a little better is, so the
points. All the things combined?
Points plus assists plus rebounds is 34.5. So when you look at, what'd you say was 22.5?
Yeah.
So if you think he's going to get 12 rebounds plus assists, then you lean toward the other way. And he's averaging 7.7 and 3.8. Mm-hmm. So it's right around 11.5 rebounds and assists he's averaging.
Should that 3.8 be higher?
I mean, yeah, probably. But this is also a team that is not shooting very well around him.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I just was kind of curious. It's like for a guy that...
I mean, last year was 4.5.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just surprised when you said that number. I was like, that sounds low.
Yeah.
And also, he is someone who, yes, is not playing with a ton of talent around him right now. But enough. And also, when we excuse Siakam's poor play, a lot of the times we bring up the playmaking. And so to have under 4 assists, I think, is like a little tough.
Yeah, I think it's just this is a team that's struggled from 3 a little bit, and that's part of it. And they've really struggled on 2s. But that's, you don't have a center playing for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
That's going to be the case. But yeah, Siakam, 4 and 5 assists the last 2 games. So that's all right. Double-digit rebounds 2 games in a row.
Okay.
So maybe you like the points, rebounds, assists a little more. And again, like you said, JD, last time against Sacramento, 32-8-1.
Yeah. So I'll probably just play Siakam with the points over. Maybe I'll jump on, depending on what we're looking at here injuries-wise come game time.
Well, we already know all those guys are in.
Yeah.
Unless there's a surprise extra inactive.
Uh-huh.
So One other thing on the Raptors.
But they're a money line play for me. I haven't figured out the second piece of that, but for me, I'm going to play the Raptors in the money line with something else tonight. Yeah. Probably Warriors on the road as like short favorites as well.
So one more note on the Raptors before I wanted to ask Ailish a Warriors question, actually, because I know they're a big Warriors family. The Raptors have won 3 of 4, and their only loss in that stretch was the 1-point loss to the Thunder where they almost stole it away.
It's still the Thunder.
They gave it away. I'm not saying that as a compliment. What I'm setting up here is you're about to play Brooklyn tomorrow, and then you have some tougher home games ahead. Mm-hmm. This is that 10 of 11 at home stretch that we talked about for a long time, and you're now 3-3 on it.
Yeah, you got
to
win.
This is not only a win because you need to start nudging that record closer to 500, but things are not going to get any easier. You're through the easy stretch after tonight. And you're probably on the second night of a back-to-back in Brooklyn tomorrow. You're probably not liking your chances in that one. So why am I
then not playing Raptors, Warriors as a moneyline parlay? Because that's plus 131.
Yeah.
Is it simply because I'm afraid that Miles Turner and Sabonis are both auditioning for jobs on the Warriors that they kill them? Because that's my narrative thought on why I wouldn't play that.
No, the Warriors have been a very good cover team.
Yeah.
Like they're the interesting, like, hey, they're a public team and they're a dominant team. Mm-hmm. Usually it's really hard to find value on teams like that. They're 17-8 against the spread.
I'm just talking money line here. Like, just
but I'm saying, like, so they're a -4.5 favorite. So the same level of favorite as the Raptors. Mm-hmm. Both are -185. So like you said, you can get them together for what, +137?
Yes. 131.
Yeah,
137.
There you go. So my Warriors question is, I mean, I like the Warriors to win that game. I think that's a great money line parlay, those two together. Steph Curry is 6 three-pointers away.
That's why I'm playing this.
From Ray Allen. Six from tying, 7 from breaking. Now, I think the Pacers are obviously a good landing spot to rack up a lot of threes. The over-under for Steph Curry is actually at 6.5. So the over-under is basically tie or break the record.
Mm-hmm.
Tie is under. Break is over. The one thing keeping me, and obviously Steph Curry is not going to intentionally miss or turn down threes for this reason, but his next game is at Madison Square Garden. And like, there's got to be a little bit of you that would love to do that at MSG.
I can't play the over now.
That's
you just
tough,
ruined
Blake.
The over is like, I'm not playing the under because there's
no,
I always say to people,
no, you just bet for the good stuff.
Well, no, I always nothing boggles the mind more. And I've actually had this happen fairly recently where a friend of mine was like, oh, I lost this parlay because I bet under on Steph Curry threes. And I was like, that has to be the lamest, most horrific bet ever. Because like, okay, you might win, but at what cost? You know? He's gonna take a million of them.
Also, like, is there a more terrifying betting experience than betting against Steph Curry and then seeing him knock down a couple? It's like, ooh.
I almost feel like you should just be able to bet the over and you should like, that's it. It's either you play the over or you stay away on Steph Curry threes, because it's just insane to do that. Boy, now you have me rethinking my money line parlay just because Steph goes into assist mode tonight. I don't know. That's just something.
He
doing it at Madison Square Garden.
He doesn't have to go into assist mode. He can just like he got 6 against Portland the other night. And like,
but then he got 2 the other night.
Yeah, that was a really bad game. And it was also like the 76ers, I know the 76ers won that game.
Yeah.
The 76ers they went full Nick Nurse of like, we are not letting Steph Curry get these off. And I know he ended up taking 14, but almost every one of those was with Matisse Thybulle in his jersey, and Thybulle even blocked a couple of them.
No, I can't do this. I can't bet the over.
6.5's high, man. He's only done it twice in his last 8 games.
I know.
He's only hit 7 threes in
a game. I don't think he does it tonight.
Well, people were losing their minds going,
I think he gets like 4 tonight. And then leaves a nice little
cushion for
MSG.
I just got to say, as a Ray Allen fan, like as one of my favorite guys in NBA history.
My first jersey.
Yeah. Oh.
Sonics Ray Allen.
One of my first like realizations of what a fanboy I was, I was in grade 11 because I remember where I was when I found out Ray Allen got traded. I was in grade 11 and he got traded for Gary Payton. And it's the saddest I've ever been. And then Ray Allen was so good, and they traded for Ray Allen for like 20 games of Gary Payton. And that's got to be one of the worst trades like that people don't talk about in NBA history, because Ray Allen was amazing. The best I can ever remember him against San Antonio Spurs team that was just dominant at the time, and Ray Allen almost carried them to a win. He got, I think it was Jerome James, paid by the Knicks because he was so good that he was just hanging out near the basket. And like, it hurts me how fast Steph is doing this. Like, that's the part.
Yeah, it's wild.
And it's not The worst part about it that actually infuriates me is people go, almost half as many games. It's like, no, it's not almost half. That's not true. It's more than half, okay? But it's like, that it's closer to half than it is to full, yeah. So people
He's
are doing that.
33 years old and fewer than 800 games.
I know. Ah! It just hurts me, man. So, you know what? I can't throw the Pacers. I can't throw that money line in here tonight. Maybe I have to happiness hedge it, but I can't root for Steph in these moments because even just every little extra game, I'm so petty as a Ray Allen fan that I'm like, just take, one less game is good.
He's not going to not break it. So
I know.
It's going to happen.
But maybe just Steph only hits six more threes for his career.
That's what I mean.
What if he does it here in Toronto?
He won't.
That's four games this week.
Yeah, but this week he just hits one a night.
No.
Yeah. Papers out.
Ailish said that to me like...
He's waiting for the Raptors connection.
No, I think the MSG one that Blake has there
cool.
is...
I like that.
I think he's smart enough to know what that does for him and his branding power enough that I wouldn't even be surprised if he only takes like... If I'm the Pacers tonight, I'm almost like challenging him to take threes.
I'm like,
I dare you to do it. I think
we're going to freeze out Jordan Poole.
Dude, this is the NBA. This is professional sports. When people think that guys don't care about this stuff or know about
this
stuff, it's like they all know. They all care. And Steph Curry cares. And he knows what it's going to be. And he knows what the moment's going to be. And he knows how he's going to honor Ray Allen. And I think that, doing it against the Knicks versus against the Pacers is like a massive difference. So I'm staying away from that. And if anything, I would recommend the bet I think is the worst in sports, which is betting against Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's worse, betting against Connor McDavid to score or betting against Steph Curry or like to get a point or mm-hmm. Steph Curry to hit his over prop in threes?
Look, and I just need to add the disclaimer here that I am just providing information. What you do with it is up to everyone. Okay, quickly, because we got to get the Born at 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Rams +2.5 at Cardinals.
Well,
on the Monday Nighter.
I got to just ask Ailish right away. Like,
why me?
No, well, you, because you've been, maybe your cold streak has to do with you not being on the show and just giving your, like, intuition.
Well, I got into my head about my hot streak.
Although your Hamilton parlay was rough because double loss.
No, it was opposite.
No, it wasn't.
I bet against Hamilton both times.
No, I know, but that's, you were like, hey, I got the Hamilton parlay. Lewis Hamilton wins and the Ticats win.
I did bet on Max, though, so
yeah, I know
just,
you did.
I lied, too. Yeah. About
I know, you're a liar.
Yeah,
you're disingenuous.
Sorry,
you tried to influence the line the other way so that everyone would bet Lewis Hamilton.
Use
and then
your enormous.
Like, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, you don't have anything right now that you're feeling just like you got the Ailish vibe on a big long shot thing? Like, what about touchdown scores? Like, so for me tonight, this is a weird one because the line, it's one of those, like, short road dogs, which mm-hmm. is something that Blake and I have been playing and trumpeting for a long time. But it's also on paper... I don't really believe in the Rams, and there's this weird public confidence thing going on with the Cardinals, and I'm like, is this Vegas knowing something we don't know, or is this because we're all shaky on the Cardinals who have not been in the public eye and people still believing that this Rams team is going to turn around? And like, if I'm just basing this off what I've seen between these two teams this year, this should be a no-brainer win for the Cardinals, and yet I can't shake the feeling of I don't want to bet this on the money line. I don't want to bet this straight up. I don't want to bet the spread. I think I'm just going to play touchdown scores. I like the tight ends in this game. Mm. Both tight ends, Zach Ertz +195 anytime touchdown and Tyler Higbee +200 anytime touchdown. Like those are sort of the ones I'm gravitating towards.
I'm definitely going to go road dogs on this one.
There you go.
Yeah,
you
that's what I'm doing for sure. I haven't got into the player props yet, but I will circle back with you on that. Or maybe I won't because I'm getting nervous about everyone listening to my bets. And then,
but short road dogs.
They're mushing me.
Yeah, I mean,
the short
road dog thing has hit at like over a 62% clip. So that's
like
a thing.
It seems like a safe
It's
bet.
A thing. But like these things are like maybe the market adjusts at some point because they recognize that and that it's been getting priced poorly. But also like I think this is a really good line if you're trying to drum up even action on either side, which is mm-hmm. sometimes the case. I have more faith in the Cardinals than the Rams, and they're playing at home, so I'll mm-hmm. probably play Cardinals. But I'll probably dig into the team side props a little bit and see if there's a more fruitful way to play it than the -2.5.
I'll probably end up playing the Cardinals too, because again, my brain just goes, their defense has been better. Kyler has been infinitely better than Stafford, who does not look healthy. The Odell thing is a farce. Like they just beat up on the Jacksonville Jaguars, and now we're like, ooh, look at the Rams.
Yeah,
like,
they were on a 3-game losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But what team hasn't beat up on the Jacksonville Jaguars mm-hmm. this year? Ailish?
I look at this, and I would, if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, I'm going into that like locker room and playing this card of, we've won all these games and those guys have looked like losers. And just because they signed Odell Beckham and they're so flashy, they're the LA team. Oh, everyone just penciled them down to win this division. And then we keep slowly winning away. Even when we don't, our infrastructure is so good. We could lose a guy who's an MVP candidate at the beginning of the year and still win football games. And we're not even a field goal favorite. And we're at home where genuinely, I guess it has changed. It has shifted the value of being home field this year. Mm-hmm. But they're saying to us that we're not as good as this team and that this team should beat us on a neutral field. And if I'm the Cardinals, this has to be a statement moment where you go out and you gain public confidence and you know that if you win this thing, that the rest of the week is, why have we disrespected the Cardinals? And the Cardinals, are they Super Bowl favorites? And instead, if they lose, it's like they're frauds. So huge, huge narrative game for them.
For sure. Another huge narrative implication, if you flip over to Monday Night Raw on Sportsnet tonight, the Street Profits against Rey Mysterio and his son, winner gets a shot at the tag team championship.
Wow.
We bring that up. Because the new champs could be coming here December 29th at Coca-Cola Coliseum as part of the WWE holiday tour. And we want to send you. Our phone lines are now open.
Oh,
if you're the fifth caller right now at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or star 590. Hit any of those numbers to win. We'll be giving away tickets every day this week, so stay tuned.
Go.
Sportsnet now is Canada's official home for all things WWE. Live stream Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-view events. Start streaming today with plans as low as $14.99. Again, December 29th, Coca-Cola Coliseum, star 590 or 416-870-0590.
Fifth caller, get it.
Fifth caller.